From Westside Church in Bend, Oregon, this is Behind the Message. In this podcast, we take you behind what we teach here at Westside. I'm Ben Fleming.
I'm Evan Earwicker, and with us today is a new friend to us, but a longtime pastor and someone who's joined our speaking team in just this week. Actually, your first time speaking for us in recent years. You were at Westside, though, and you spoke for Pastor Ken Johnson. How long ago was that?
That was just after the Civil War.
Okay, yeah, yeah, 1894.
Yeah, back there somewhere, yeah.
This is Mike Meeks, and Mike pastored for many, many years in Kirkland, Washington, and then planted your church, East Lake, in Chula Vista, and most recently retired from that. Yeah,
yes.
Is that fair to say?
And came back to Oregon, and when my kids and grandkids all left San Diego, and we were done with our role as the senior pastor there, we decided we were going to make a move. And so we were just determining, is it going to be in Jupiter, Florida, where my daughter and her family are, or we're going to come to Bend, Oregon, where my son lives, and a whole lot of other family members from both sides of our family. So I've got, I think we counted up 17 family members within about 20 minutes of our house.
And it's Bend, which is far better than Florida, let's be honest.
Well, I'll let you know in February.
Okay. Exclude that month. You would have had the whole summer in Jupiter, and that sounds rough to me.
But it's been a bit of a rugged summer up there, yeah.
Yeah.
Down there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we appreciate you being willing to lend your expertise, if you can say that.
Deep and wide.
To us as really young, vibrant leaders in our late 20s, to have your, you know, years and decades and decades of experience. It's really great.
That's good. Yeah. I sleep with a grandmother, so, you know, I'm old.
Yeah.
The podcast in which we just compliment ourselves the whole time is really one that I'm interested in. Let's keep that going. Yeah. Oh,
you're beautiful people.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. You too. I really am.
Uh-huh. So we're talking about prayer in this series. You preached on this idea of prayer as seen through the lens of how Jesus taught us to pray. I was wondering if you could maybe share with us a little bit your how you came to faith and how prayer was or wasn't a part of that, and how that maybe affected how you have a prayer life now.
Yes, it's definitely something that has grown and is now, I would say, a lot more ease. I grew up Catholic, and so I can say the Our Father in under 10 seconds. Because after you go to confession, you are given, you know, your penance, which is, I want you to go and say, you know, 5 Our Fathers and 6 Hail Marys, or whatever the priest determines would be a good amount. Their intention is for you to learn the prayer. Mm-hmm. But my intention was to get done with the penance. And so I can say the Our Father, and I'm done. And it's quick. It is now something that I love. That is a great prayer. And there's a cyclical character to a lot of the Psalms, for example, where it starts with worship of Almighty God and then maybe goes into some complaining, a little lamentation, and then ends with worship of God. And so often our prayer goes the same way. It's, oh God, you know, you're God. And then, but this really sucks right now in my life. And then I choose to trust. And it's the prayer that Jesus taught the disciples, the Our Father, Lord's Prayer, whatever you call it, is beautiful in how it covers my personal needs. It covers my sin. It covers others' sins against me. You know, it's pretty complete package, and it's something that is a pattern that we can follow and not necessarily have to do it in a rote prayer, but the pattern can be repeated. I'm going to trust you, Jesus. Now I need to be honest about me or this circumstance and end with, and I choose to trust you. You know, his own prayer in the garden, you know, this is a tough thing, Father, but not my will. yours be done. Right. I trust you, Abba. And it's something that prayer for me has not always been an easy thing. I've had some, as I mentioned, some interesting experiences, awkward, like the junior high dance, you know, going across that gym floor at the first dance I ever went to and asking a girl if she wanted to dance with me. There was a significant chance that there would be rejection.
What makes you say that?
Well, because I, as a freshman, I wrestled 98 pounds.
Okay.
So there I
Beefy
was.
Beefy kid, for sure.
I was always having to look up when I asked the question if they wanted to dance.
Girls love that, I hear.
Oh, do you remember any of like your, the first song you danced to? Do you remember the?
It is a blur.
Okay.
I have no idea. The first concert I ever went to was Three Dog Night, and the opening band was Ike and Tina Turner.
No way.
That's amazing. Yes.
That's amazing.
Wow. It was amazing. And I was in eighth grade, and Matt Court, Eugene. And I went, wow, the Ikettes are very interesting to me. An eighth grade boy.
That's awesome.
So something that's come up, all three of us have taught in this series now around prayer, and something that we haven't necessarily taken head on, but have talked around. It's a little bit of an undergirding of all this is the accessibility of prayer. There's an intimidation factor that comes to it. You're talking about the dance and your message. You referenced being in a prayer circle and you're holding hands with people. And then all of a sudden you realize that person prayed out loud, that person, oh my gosh, yeah. This is a wave
that's coming
my direction.
Yes.
What do you think that is that makes prayer feel so inaccessible to us? And does that prevent most of us, or a lot of us even in church circles, from having a prayer life because we feel like we can't access it?
Well, there's a prayer life that's in the closet, and then there's the public prayer life when you are going to be on the spot. Now, for me, it was, based on my own insecurity as that prayer was coming toward me that, oh my gosh, I'm going to look stupid. I'm going to say something that is completely wrong and totally be unimpressive. And it was all about me. And I wanted to look as good as possible. And so it's a very abbreviated prayer, as I recall, in that particular moment. But the idea of prayer for me has been one of those things where do you have, you know, this much time in the morning, and I have my prayer time, my devotional, whatever you're going to call it. And I've probably moved away from that kind of a prayer life to really trying to be aware of the presence of God in my day.
Yeah.
And when someone asks me, oh, yeah, this one, please pray for me, I'll go, okay, let's pray. Because I'll forget. You know, I won't remember, oh, what was that thing? I just have learned to just, okay, let's, if it's a place that they're comfortable with and I'm, well, let's just pray right now. You know, it's one of those things now that I want to be in a place where I'm aware of his presence. I mean, I never pray, oh, Jesus, be with us. He already established that one. I'll never leave you or forsake you. So it's a really stupid prayer. I don't need to pray that anymore.
I think I prayed that one a few times. Yeah. Smack me next time.
Yeah, I'll, if I'm around.
Okay, yeah.
I would be happy to come.
You may not be around, but Jesus will be. Yeah. So that's important.
He'll be there if I'm
Mike
gone.
Promised he would be with us. Yeah.
Mike will be with you always.
Now.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Mike, you growing up Catholic and then kind of coming into both the Pentecostal church through Foursquare, but then evangelicalism at large. And we grew up, Ben and I, in separate churches, but in the kind of the charismatic movement from childhood. And so I think we bring those experiences as children about prayer to how sometimes we act or react to prayer. And so it's interesting you bring up even devotions, because that was like the bread and butter for us growing up. Like, you know, are you doing your devotions and doing your prayers in the morning? And it feels like that can become as rote and sometimes just going through the motions, much like maybe in Catholic church growing up, doing the Our Fathers seven times became just something you wanted to get through.
Right.
So how do we keep that fresh? How do we encourage people to embrace an approach to prayer that doesn't lose its life?
I think for me, it's, well, let me say this. I've had people come and say, I don't know how to pray. And I said, well, that's not true. And they go, well, what do you mean? I said, you just talk to me. If you can form words with your mouth, you can pray.
Yeah.
And it's sort of demystifying it. For me, it was, I can just talk to God. And because he's there, whether I feel him or don't feel him, it doesn't change the reality of what he promised. Mm-hmm. He's with me. And so I talk to him as though it's true, whether I feel it's true or not. I mean, there's times I have felt like God was a million miles away, and yet I continued to talk to him. I went through about a year and a half of anxiety and depression, and it was in my 20s, and it was really confusing. I had no sense whatsoever of the presence of God during that time. But at the same time, I finally came to a place where I just said, Lord, if nothing ever changes, if I never feel you, sense your presence in any way ever again, I believe. I believe. And from that moment on, nothing changed. It just continued for a while, you know?
Snap your fingers and nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well, let's see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How committed you are to that path. But it did begin to change. And I got some great help. You know, I suffered, you know, silently for quite a while. And because, of course, I didn't want to, you know, appear weak-minded. And all the things that go along with anybody dealing with, you know, depressive anxiety issue would feel. But it was during that time that, looking back, nothing had changed. Hmm. God hadn't left me. He was still with me. And he was still faithful. But I couldn't see it in the time. As I looked back at the landscape of my life during that time, all I saw was a valley. Hmm. I couldn't see any of the good. It became very difficult to see that. But it was through that experience that, frankly, I don't struggle with certain doubts that I did struggle with. Hmm. A mentor to me, a guy named Jerry Cook, he talked about it in a way, he said, you know, sometimes when you're experiencing doubt or you're going through a difficult time, it's sort of like you're on a road and you're rounding a corner and you just can't see what's ahead. But over time, you've learned that he is faithful, that he is with you, and you don't have to be fearful about what's around the corner. Hmm. Because regardless, whatever it is, he's with you.
Yeah. And we've talked about this even last week, talking about it's not in spite of valley seasons, it's not in spite of the wall we hit in faith that we're formed and that we become, you know, mature in our faith. That is the ground in which this stuff grows, right? Yeah. And do you feel like that was the season for you, like the most formative season in that valley where like you learned what it was to just be okay that Jesus was close when you couldn't feel it?
That was definitely a part of the process. I would say the other was when my wife and I hit a couple of difficult seasons in our marriage and didn't know if we were going to stay together. And it was really, really rough. And fortunately, she got some help, and she's a lot better now.
Yeah.
She's not here, obviously. Yeah.
And we actually have her on the line. Let's get to Carmen.
Let's not do that. Thank you. Sorry, Carmen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you even volunteered earlier. You said if for some reason we ended up separated, people would be asking questions about you and not her.
Yeah, no one would say, what did Carmen do?
Yeah, that's right.
No. That would not even cross their mind. What did Mike do to mess this up?
Yeah.
So help some people that listened to your message this last week. And, you know, I was going into my message the previous week, brought up this word family and what it means to be the family of God and then to be commissioned and going forward as the family of God. Your message references the Father a lot, right? Because of the Lord's Prayer, our Father, and framing that. In your experience as a pastor, how have you helped people relate to things like family and father who maybe don't have quite the positive experiences that some of us have had with those things?
Well, I did not have a positive experience. My father died when I was 9, and he was an occasionally employed alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So he was really not around. And when he was, it wasn't pleasant. So when I walked into the house as a little kid, I immediately took the emotional temperature of the room. You know, is this going to be safe? Is this going to be tense? What, you know, you figure it out. And everybody in the family does it around someone that is, you know, suffering with that and causing everyone else around them to suffer with them.
Yeah.
And so the idea of Father God was one of those concepts for me that was it represented disappointment. It represented an absentee father. And so, and I wouldn't have trusted, you know, that idea. For example, the idea of grace, when I began to learn about God's grace. And my grandmother was a bitter woman, very, very hurt and hurtful. And her name was Grace. And I thought, God's grace, well, he has one too. Bummer. Sorry, God. You know, it's the idea of the whole idea of family gets overlaid with our pain and with the difficulties that we've faced or the disappointments that we've gone through, the loss of. And so, you know, using that metaphor of the family in the conversations with Jesus, he used it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that is often a hurdle. And a lot of people that I've discovered over the years, pastoring for 40-plus years, is that a lot of people have a father wound.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of Jesus talking about God as this father, this grace-filled, ever-patient father, it's so appealing and so inviting and frames the beginning of being able to have this prayerful conversation where I choose to trust, Abba, take this cup from me, mm-hmm. yet not my will. I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
I trust you. My job is to trust and obey.
Yeah.
His job are the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
This was something that my pastor, Roy Hicks Jr., used to say. Your responsibility is obedience. His responsibility is the outcomes.
Yeah,
but I love to control the outcomes. And if I anticipate an outcome I'm not going to like, well, then I don't want to go down a road of obedience that leads me to an outcome I might not approve.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those. It's kind of like, you know, when we were all in college and we're dating, and it was like, you know, I'm kind of who do I want to have as a girlfriend that could potentially become a wife? And it's like, you know, I didn't want God to choose that for me because he loves everybody and I don't. And, you know, I want to make my own selections and have him stamp the approval letter,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Prayer is that coming to that place saying, you know, he really is good all the time. And even though there's a lot of difficult circumstances, we've faced a lot of things, we can continue to trust even when we don't get it. It's the idea of prayer comes out of this place of, I have confidence even when I don't have certainty.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a lot of certainty, but I have had a growing confidence, and it grew in the hard times.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't had a lot of spiritual growth at Disneyland. You know, it's not during those seasons that you struggle and that you focus and that you lean in, but you'll do one of two things in those circumstances, in those moments, in those seasons of doubt or pain, and you'll either press in or pull away.
Yeah. So trusting the outcomes to God in prayer, how does that change or does it affect your willingness to ask God for specific outcomes? So do you find yourself often, you know, praying for a specific healing or praying for provision in a certain way, or is that something you kind of have to let go of?
No way.
Prayer. Talk to us about that.
I ask very specifically, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want the new Toyota Sequoia. I want the TRD Pro. You know, I don't mind getting.
I see that. That was in your prayer journal this morning. Yeah. I see it open right there. That's amazing.
Yes, if you have one for sale.
If you're a Toyota dealer listening.
He prays at the car lot all the time. Just kind of walks around there.
No, but I don't have any problem with the idea of praying specifically. And then it's fun to watch those prayers get specifically answered. Hmm. You know, but at the same time, it's your will be done. And if I really can let that go, all right, here's what I'm asking for, and you'll bring clarity. And maybe I'm asking for something that, you know, really is, you know, dumb. That this is going to be the thing that, oh, God, if only. You know, when I was a little kid in Catholic school, I wanted a Honda 90 more than anything. And now a Honda 90 wouldn't do it for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like as you grow as a person, as you grow in your relationship with Jesus, change occurs. You know, there was a time early in my walk. I don't necessarily think the same way, want the same things, do the same things as when I was first walking with Jesus. I remember and early in my Christian faith, 17, and praying, Jesus, I really want to know your will for my life. And if you would just clarify for me what you want me to do with my life. Yeah. So I don't do all the same things I did because prayer and coming closer to Jesus, some of these other things begin to drop off. Mm-hmm. And I begin to say, wait a minute, that's probably not a good thing. Mm. And change happens with God very patiently. Mm-hmm. You know, he was trying to show me, you know, there's a new way to live. Mm. And I was a slow adapter in many areas. And along the way, what I look back on all that is how patient he was with me and how impatient I am sometimes with other people mm-hmm. and their stuff. Because I can so clearly see, I mean, how many people do you know you could live their life so much better than they're living it for them, right?
Right, right.
You know, but that's not our job. That's not our role. I mean, I can barely, you know, walk with Jesus and be obedient and all that myself, let alone trying to do that for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you did that in the context of being a pastor all this time, right? How many years of pastoring do you have under your belt? Did we mention that number? Do you mm-hmm. want to say that number?
A lot. Over 4 decades.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of the extra complexity that sometimes I feel is that you're not just working through this as an individual, right? Which is difficult enough. And you just said, and you know, I'd love to run somebody else's life or to do that for somebody else, so difficult. And then you're pastoring a church alongside it. How did that shape your prayer life and your understanding of how God works?
One of my mentors in being a pastor is a guy named Rick Warren, Saddleback Church. And he didn't know he was a mentor to me. I think that's a great
I'm
way
sure
to...
I'm sure he's a listener, though, so now he knows.
Yeah. Now he knows. Now he knows. Thank you so much, Rick.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. I often pick mentors that they don't know they're mentoring.
Sure, yeah.
And,
yeah.
But he talked about this tension in pastoring people that are going through difficulty. And how do you not let it just completely weigh you down or move into some sort of a control mode? Mm-hmm. And he said you have to approach it with a relaxed concern. You know, yes, concern, but I'm not responsible for the outcomes. I will offer what I can offer. And there's a limit. My main job is to connect people to Jesus because it's in the context of their relationship with Jesus, their conversations with God, that they'll be changed, that they'll be healed, that they will take the next right step.
Yeah.
That's on them.
Yeah. And such good advice for anybody that's a leader in an empathetic role where empathy is required. I'm thinking of teachers and counselors and, yes, pastors, coaches. But having that ability to let that outcome go, I'm not going to own what they choose to do with that for the rest of their lives. Because if you can't set that, you're going to burn out. There's way you can handle the real stuff of everyone's life for the duration.
Yeah, that's why I knew I could not be a professional therapist because it would be like, wow, having all that on my heart and mind every day would just be a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, some people are beautifully wired to do that, and I'm grateful for them. I've taken advantage of the opportunity to sit with counselors myself and gain some perspective, get some help. And I'm grateful to them, but I know at the same time that they were able to handle it in such a way that they weren't sitting there at dinner with their family really worrying about me.
Sure, sure, yeah.
And it's true, a good therapist will be patient and watch you make discoveries and learn and grow, right? Which I find to be a comparison off to my relationship with God through prayer, where I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my therapist and I'm going, you have answers. Just give me one. Just say it. I know I can see it right here. And instead you ask me a follow-up question about my experience. I'm like, why don't you just tell
me? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, exactly. Which is probably where the answer really is in the long-term growth. And that's one of the more frustrating things about God, right? Is that I sit there and I go, I know you know the answer. Why won't you just give it to me? I'd rather not walk through the thing that creates strength or patience or longevity. And, you know, the fruit of the Spirit really is what comes through the process, right? But I don't really want to go through the process. Just point me to the fruit.
And I want patience and I want it now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And humility. I want to be known for how amazing my humility is. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, all throughout, especially Jesus's teachings, he's talking to like people that are in agriculture. So of course he uses metaphors, but the metaphors speak to the slowness of spiritual fruit. You know, like this doesn't happen over, and we don't, I'm going to go pray. And then after that, all my problems are going to be solved. And I'm going to be fully formed. And that's just not, that's not the metaphor we're given, right? Jesus speaking to the disciples and abide in me, you know, apart from
and
you
the
can
seasons,
bear no fruit. Yeah.
You know, there's time to plant, time to water, time to harvest. And then there's the downtime.
Yeah.
And I haven't always been good at the downtime.
Yeah.
I like production.
Yeah. Speak to that. How has it been coming out of your career in ministry into kind of a new season? You're not done with ministry. You're still here and you're traveling a lot and you're speaking. So it's not like you're done. But what a change after 40 years of, you know, leading at kind of that top level in the organization to something new. How has that been
for
your soul?
The title, I still am one of the speakers in Chula Vista from time to time. And so my role there, I'm called Pastor Emeritus.
Very fancy.
It's very fancy, yeah. Yes.
What's emeritus mean?
Well, here's what it means for me. I'm an advisor with no authority, which is just like being married. So I know how to do this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Carmen's really the star of this podcast. I
she
appreciate
is.
That.
She is.
God bless Carmen Yicks.
Yes. That's,
maybe we should call that the title of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
Believe me, she puts up with me. But the great thing is I don't manage anybody. And so a lot of the things that I spent a great deal of time doing, I don't have to do. And so one of the things I'm enjoying so much is doing what I do because I'm a Jesus follower, not because I'm a pastor. You know, whether that is golfing with the men's club, you know, on a Tuesday and Thursday. I wish it was I could make it every Tuesday and Thursday, but
you'll get there, Mike.
Okay.
You've only been here a few months.
You'll get I know.
There. Yeah.
But you know, anyway, it's meeting my neighbors and you know befriending people because I love Jesus and I want to represent him well, and if the opportunity presents itself, tell people about him. Invite them into this amazing relationship. What I find kind of my life message that when I find myself in certain environments, situations where I'm with folks that aren't Jesus followers or they are ex-church people for good reasons is what if God is just crazy about you? And it's one of those messages, you know, it's like, what? Oh, yeah. Jesus is absolutely in love with you. And what they're used to hearing from Christians is what you need to change, mm. what needs to be done differently. But that's me controlling outcomes.
Mm. Interesting.
Rather than presenting Jesus and then all their stuff, that let Jesus deal with all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can present maybe a better way if they ask. You know, that's one of the things Paul said is be ready to give an answer, you know, to everyone who asks. Unfortunately, I sometimes was ready to give an answer for people who weren't even asking.
Right, right.
And so that became more of me pushing,
yeah,
rather than responding. And God's more patient.
Yeah. I remember recently working with a couple here at the church, and they had had an experience with a well-meaning family, Christian family, and they had just gotten saved, just come to Jesus, just started coming to church. And these other folks, I think well-meaning, immediately went, okay, here's what you need to change, right? Here's the behaviors that need to go, and here's... And it had gotten to the point where they came to me as a pastor, and were just like, I don't know how to handle it. Like, no background in faith, no background. And it was immediately like, okay, here's the 9 steps to change your behavior so that you can fit in.
Right.
And sitting with them, just such a poignant moment. I just said, first of all, I just want to tell you, I think Jesus is so proud of you mm-hmm. that you're pursuing him. And even just that initial connection with them, of you could just see it in their eyes like, oh, wow, this isn't just about I've signed up for a behavior modification program, right? It's something deeper. Like if the grace of God is just to change our behavior, like, ugh, he wasted a lot of time and energy just to do some, you know, things that any self-help book could probably get us to, you know? So like, what is the work of grace and how does that come out in our relationships? That's what I want to know about, you know?
Yeah, grace is pretty much my go-to dependent mode because of, you know, I am less than patient. Mm. And, you know, how do you become more patient? Well, God puts you in situations where you need to exhibit patience. And prayer is that point of contact where I get the strength I need because I've got our Father is a powerful Father mm-hmm. who gifts us the Holy Spirit. And I have the power to do this. I have everything I need to follow him, obey him. I just don't always do it. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, I hope to get a little better at that next week. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I want to continue to grow. I don't think I'm done. It's like golf. I still believe I can get better.
I've golfed. I agree.
Yes, thank you.
Jeez. Let's actually critique your golf game. What's it like to be high production and low patience at the same time? I bet we got a few listeners that are feeling the same way. I think you just referenced both of those, right? I like production. Yeah, my patience is kind of low.
Yeah.
How do you handle being that way?
Well, and that's the beauty of not managing anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because I tended to be, you know, goals and objectives and had to learn that relationally, you can't lead with that. That doesn't mean you don't have those expectations.
Right.
You know, if, you know, you're hired to be a speaker as a big part of your job is, but if you, you know, regularly lay an egg, at some point you're going to go, probably need to make some adjustments to your approach. And whatever you're doing, you're going to want to perform at a level that is honoring of the position you've been given mm-hmm. or the job you have. And I think that growing into that is, you know, part of the I'm going to give it my greatest effort, but sometimes it's failing at something is where you learn who you're not, mm. you know, and finding the right fit and the right place is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. For the record, for those who were just listening, when he said regularly laying an egg, he was looking at Evan, not at me.
I did notice that. I noticed the
right
eye contact.
Right into your soul, Evan. That was very direct.
And it's not a bad thing if you need to find a different position.
A different church.
Why are you still looking at me, Mike?
It's going to be okay. God has another place for you, Evan.
This is my intervention on Behind the Message. Yikes, I feel targeted. audacious prayers, Mike. Do you find yourself praying like big crazy prayers? Has your or you know, and that's not like a that's the right answer, but or do you find that your prayer life has become something more subtle or more ongoing? What do you think?
I would say both. You know, big audacious prayers are when, you know, you have someone that you care about is dying. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're praying, oh, God, heal. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty big, audacious prayer. At the same time, trusting the outcome to him. And, you know, I'm reluctant to tell stories of God's healing power in a church service because I also know that that couple over there, their baby didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got to be careful about giving just all the examples of the win. Mm-hmm. You know, the process is mysterious. Hmm. I don't understand it all. I don't understand why yes to this and no to that. And I don't need to know. Hmm. I used to need to know. And now I trust.
Yeah.
And learning to trust, I should say.
Would you consider yourself comfortable in that space now?
Yeah.
Learning to trust? Because I'm still largely uncomfortable with that conversation, right? How did you get to that point of feeling a different sense of comfort?
I think partly is dealing with just the tensions that are in this Christian life, in life, but certainly in a life of faith. You know, truth or grace? Yes. Jesus came full of truth and grace. Mm-hmm. You know, to the woman caught in adultery, you know, go your way and sin no more. You know, where are your accusers? Neither do I condemn you. Truth and grace.
Yeah.
It was there. It was yes. Is it truth? Yes. Is it grace? Yes. And that tension shows up all over the place.
Right.
My ability to have confidence without certainty, I wanted certainty. I want certainty. I you know, if I'm going to make an investment, I want certainty. So, you know, but it's not there. And so you do your best with confidence. Hmm. And you move forward with confidence. And then it's this, you know. That relaxed concern, whether it's a relational thing or any other kind of trial or circumstance you want to see change.
Yeah. I think the expectation of certainty is something that a lot of people bring into their faith from the beginning, right? It's like, well, that's kind of why I'm here, right? Like,
yeah.
Life was crazy, and I'm pretty sure you guys are promising me certainty about the afterlife, certainty about my future, certainty about my money. Come on, prosperity gospel, you know, I'll do this, and then that will happen. And prayer can start to look like that, where it's like, yeah, you do this, and then God's going to respond in this way, and it's guaranteed.
And I can trap him, because I've got a verse that says that he's going to do this if I do that.
Yeah.
And so now you have to.
Yeah.
Well, God's not really all that impressed with my trapping of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of people in Scripture try to trap him, whether it was, you know, we always think about the Pharisees, religious leaders, but also the disciples, right? Oh, yeah. Who are like, so remember that you said, and remember this experience that we had. Can we continue to duplicate that out?
Ask and you shall receive. We want to be on your right and left.
Yeah, right. I'm like, you don't know what you're asking. You don't know what the cup you're going to have to drink. I think back to that Old Testament story, you know, with Joshua, and he encounters this angel outside the city. He's like, wait, are you on our side? And the angel's like, I'll never tell. You know, that was basically the response.
Are you for us or our enemies?
Yeah.
Neither.
Yeah.
He's like, but I am the commander of the armies of God, and I'm here.
Yeah.
In other words, I have another side, and I'm inviting you to join mine. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to join yours or theirs, but you're welcome to join mine.
Yeah. Yeah, it speaks of presence over outcome, right? Yes. Like, I'm not going to give you a guarantee of the outcome, but I will guarantee you my presence.
Yes.
And I think I even mentioned this last week, like, I have this, you know, creeping suspicion that all of Christian growth and maturity is developed when we understand the presence of God in suffering. You know, like, where else do we find the kind of, you know, take up your cross and follow me, except if we're at some point experience the low lows and find that God's in that with us, you know? Because you're right. Disneyland is not a great place for us to become mature faith, you know, people of faith, right? It's not the high heights of Christian experience that will stretch and challenge us. It's that place where you're like, I don't actually know if God can hear me.
Right.
Because it hurts so bad.
Well, like when I was, you know, going through that season of anxiety and depression, there was a part of me that if I started to feel better, I would get nervous. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know what's coming. You know, it's like there was this sort of a fatalism attached to it that if anything good happens, well, something bad's coming. You know, the Eeyore walk of faith.
Yeah.
And it's a different approach when you go, the worst that can happen and I'll be fine. Hmm. You know, well, you know, what's the worst? They could kill me. Well, I don't have to be afraid of that. Death, yeah, where's your sting?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It kind of removes the superstition from our prayers, right?
Yes.
Too, when we're not like, well, if this, then that's probably, or, oh no, how many times? I prayed 13 times. Oh God, what's going to happen? You know, like, you remove all that when you have this contentment.
Well, it says somewhere in Scripture prayer, that, right? Oh, you know, all these bad things come in threes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no.
It's also nice to remove the pressure from my prayer that me and my feelings and this version of Ben Fleming right now need to be right, because I'm making this request and I need you to grant me my request, right? I don't necessarily trust my own pretty narcissistic view about my own situation, my own needs and wants for not just me, but the world around me immediately right now. Because my whole life I've gotten a year down the road and I've been like, whew. I would rather not hear last year's version of Ben ever again, because right? My experience was not reflective of reality.
I think that is true for most people, that at some point, if, you know, I'm going to go and talk to God about this, but, you know, he knows what I did last summer. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not qualified. I'm not qualified to pray. I'm not good enough. If you've ever had that thought, I just want you to know it's absolutely true. You're not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're not qualified, but he qualifies you. And it's his righteousness we're clothed in, not mine. Mm-hmm. I'm not dependent on my own. And so I'm super qualified in him.
Yeah.
Remain in me and I'll remain in you know. Stay hooked into the vine.
And I think that's a comfort, not just because we've made mistakes in the past, but because our future selves will look back on us now and be like, oh, you had so much to learn, you know? And God is outside of that slow growth pathway, you know, like he's complete. And so when we anchor ourselves to that, it doesn't really matter that we're still in development, of course. We don't have to be fully formed in this moment to access like the perfect thing that's God's presence, mm-hmm. right? Like
omnipresent.
Yeah.
He sees it all.
Yeah.
And I can trust that he knows what's around that corner.
Yeah.
You know, he knows all my responses. And he loves me even though he knows down the road there, I'm going to make some bad choices. I'm going to make some mistakes in this thing. I'm going to say something in anger. I'm going to get frustrated with a kid, or whatever it is. He knows all that. And yet he loves me now and mm-hmm. he loves me then. Mm-hmm. He loves me here and he loves me there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the confidence part.
Yeah. Yeah, and that stupid kid in our history, you know, that was me, that that brought me to this place. You know, so I think we can't be too hard on our past selves.
Yeah.
Or regret, you know, all the mistakes. Well, no, those mistakes actually brought us to a place, and they formed who we are now. And,
right.
And yeah, we would do it differently. And yet, because we did it that way, now we're sitting here
right.
in this community or with this family. You know, and like God has a way of working out through
yes.
our boneheaded.
There are so many things I look back on and wished I would have made a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it doesn't work that way. You know, I remember having a conversation in a church situation. Said, well, you know, if I had it to do over again, and the guy that was in the car with me went, stop, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do now? If I had it to do over, well, you want to learn and analyze, think about it. But what really it comes down to is, given the choices you have made, what does that mean about the choices you're making now? Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that count.
And there's an ignorance too. If I just had more control, things would be better. And of course, not necessarily true at all. Probably absolutely objectively not true. This idea right. that if I could control the outcomes, everything.
And there's so much, so little that we have any real control over. Mm. You know, when it rains, let it. Mm-hmm. Because you got no control either way.
Yeah. I think about this a lot in parenting. I've read studies of like how actual little influence you have on the specific outcomes of your children's behavior, you know?
Yeah.
That a lot of that is who they're going to become, and it's up to their choices. Mm-hmm. But as a parent, you feel like it's 100% my parenting that's going to determine their choices. And, oh, no, they're actual humans. And sometimes you have to be okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you look at the example in Genesis where God's first two kids rebelled and then one grandson killed another. Well, does that mean God is just like the worst parent ever, or was he just on a learning curve?
Right. Yeah, it was early, right?
It was early. It was Genesis.
That's right.
And, you know, I think that releasing people from my completely stupid idea that I'm going to control it, or that I really have, you know, if I do all this right, then it's going to work out perfectly for them. How many families have I sat down with where they were just wonderful, not perfect, but wonderful, and their kid goes a different path, you know?
Yeah.
It's my own experience. It's many people's experiences. But I always like to remind people that the last chapter's not written, you know, and God sees around the corner. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So continue to pray, continue to hope, continue to trust.
Yeah.
And that's prayer.
Yeah.
That's not an act of prayer. That's being in a lifestyle of talking to God. The beauty about today's culture is you can actually walk around talking to yourself, but people just think you're talking to somebody on the phone. Mm-hmm. And so you don't look like, well, there's a wacko doodle over there walking down the street. No, I don't mind at all just having conversations now.
Yeah, put the AirPods in and you can say whatever you want.
I can say whatever I want. And people go, oh, what's that?
It's formation.
You mentioned Eeyore. It's the fact that you're dressed like Pooh Bear when you're doing it that I think people are watching. It's very strange.
Pooh Bear. The red shirt?
Yeah, just the red shirt.
You're going to want to edit that
Maybe
out.
Maybe Christopher Robin.
If you're going to tell a joke, you might want to give me some sort of an indicator.
Okay, so just before this podcast, you walked us into a joke.
Oh, my gosh.
And you did the setup so long and so smooth, we thought you were serious, and then it was a punchline. So that's my little...
It was the poker face for me that you had, and it was very straight in your normal rhythm and everything. It didn't feel like a wind-up to a joke. You are a dangerous person.
You repeat the joke on another podcast.
Another podcast.
Not today.
That's great. Mike, we appreciate you being a part of the church. What we're doing in our leadership and your voice in that has been really great, and we're looking forward to hearing you speak again. I don't know when the next time you're going to be speaking at Westside, but we'll get that on the calendar.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll just bounce you both out, and I'll just take over the world.
Perfect. That's
no,
exactly
I don't
what
want to do that.
That's what Carmen wants, too, I heard.
Yeah.
God bless Carmen Meeks. Thanks for listening. We're at behindthemessage.com, and, of course, our church website is westsidechurch.org. All of our back sermons, I'm sure you want to hear us preach. So all our back sermons are there. But we sure appreciate you following along as we lead into a posture of prayer.